Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. DebatePhysicsAlso.com, but, you know, gotta find a debatable person. I might be getting somewhere. I don't know. I sent out an email, actually got a reply, so who knows? Yeah, it's not a reply that says, yes, I'll do it, but, you know, at least it's something. So, might be some hope. Alright, so anyway, Brozo. Oh. So annoying. It says here, Dr. S simply requests one where the masses are confirmed. Well, say no more. I can oblige there. I was going to make it public at 4 a.m. So just another statement. We've been waiting 4 months now. He's had the air track. He can't do the two simple experiments. All right? Compress the two carts, against the same spring. Push them into the spring halfway, let's say, let them go. One mass cart, then a two mass cart, same spring compression, just simple. Couldn't be simpler. And bang the one mass cart into the two mass cart and film that. Can't produce these two simple experiments. Instead does this crap. Okay. Alright, so I was going to make it public at 4 a.m. when I figured Gary would still be awake, but overslept and lost the motivation in my sleepy must put the bins out state of mind. I mean, this is just such bullshit. I mean, it's insufferable bullshit. Nobody should have to interact with people this full of shit. He just keeps playing games. Oh, I lost them. Oh, the dog ate it. Oh, it's just the constant excuse making for not producing what he says he's proven. Oh, and then he says, then I got on with organizing a new air track experiment. Why? Mike, why can't you just do the ones we requested? The actual ones requested, not just by me, but I think everybody else would raise their hand and say, yes, Steve, please, we'd like to see some more. And you can't do it. All right, testing Gary's idea. So again, this isn't what I asked you to test. Okay. Of four objects, each doubling in mass, hitting one another in a sequence. Yes, the perpetual motion machine, shithead. Call it what it is. You're going to test the perpetual motion machine. So instead of doing the simple experiments requested, you're going to test something that's impossible. That Gary says is impossible. I did a rough test already just to see how likely to pan out. It has to use all the full length, so he can't figure out how to put more mass on the objects. Instead, he makes them longer. Okay. Full length, because the last glider is about a meter long on its own. It did pretty much what you would expect. So this is what a rational person expects it to make more momentum. And so he's going to give a lesson on wrecking balls now, right? And what he's basically said, if I make a Newton's cradle with increasing masses, I can put a little tiny bit of energy in one side, and I'll get a big pile of momentum out of the other side. So instead of using a wrecking ball, the wrecking ball company should be used a bunch of wrecking balls in a row, and they should just swing a little one into the one end, and just let the wrecking balls make more momentum. And this guy has, whatever you want to call it, the insane ego problem to think he should be instructing anybody else on reality. It did pretty much what you would expect if you're an idiot. Each glider going ever slower speeds, even though the momentum would be greater. So he says, even though the momentum would be greater. Strange statement, right? You would think he would have gotten some sort of measurement of the momentum being greater or give us some kind of statement. Slower speeds, it means a little bit ambiguous, isn't it? Because frankly, the slower speed is 2/3. That is, it's above half, which momentum says it has to be. Conservation of momentum says it can't go faster than half. And yet he thinks he'll use this ambiguous language. It's just so stupid. When I'm organized to video it and do it as precisely as possible, why can't you do the other experiment like that, precisely as possible, and just show us that video? I will then try a few different ways. Why? Okay, small hitting large hitting small. Why? We already know those we already know the large hitting small won't make any free energy. Yeah, doesn't work. Free momentum. It means you're going to destroy all the energy. That's your theory. All the energy gets destroyed. That's your theory. Your theory is when I bang the heavy thing into the light thing, I lose all the energy. Yeah, that's why you make free momentum going one way and you lose momentum going the other way. You have to sort of understand at least that rule. Oh, what an idiot. I guess that's why they use springs, because otherwise some of the energy is lot to making them vibrate a bit too aggressively. So, yeah, that's a tiny bit. The vibrations are a tiny bit of energy. Tiny. You know, it doesn't take much energy to make a tuning fork make a hell of a lot of noise. I would also like to try steel ball. So it's just amazing, you know. Instead of springs, because I'm convinced steel balls act like springs. So he doesn't even understand that springs are compression storage devices, that you're storing energy. And there's no way you could store energy in a steel ball. You can't store it. But he thinks so. Yeah, okay. He's convinced. Steel ball is just like a spring. I mean, it's so bad. As soon as he talks any theory, you realize this guy is such a fucking imbecile. And that's why we don't that's why he can't do these simple experiments. It's because he's a fucking imbecile. So then he says, actually watching some wrecking ball footage, initially distracted because the first thing that pops up when you type wrecking ball is... Oh, okay, so who cares about Mickey Seilers? Millie. Mickey, Millie, whatever. All right, and so we picture them as bigger than they actual are. Yeah, well, wrecking balls, you know, the fact is the crane has to be able to hold it up, which means the crane has to be much bigger than the wrecking ball. So unless you want it, you know, unless you have a permit to, you know, drive your 20-ton train down the road, yeah, you're going to be sort of out of luck because a lot of places don't want you driving a 20-ton train down the road. I mean, crane. Is it a... kind of break the road into little pieces. But anyway, so yeah, you can't use too big a wrecking ball. It's not that they don't want to use a bigger one, they just can't. Okay, anyway, so he doesn't understand this at all, and so this is the real key statement. All right, and if we follow Gary and Toadie's logic, then we can have it. Oh, here we go. I was chatting with someone about how Gary and Toadie just haven't thought that argument through. No, the point is for 300 years, you idiots haven't thought something as simple as wind. You don't even get the concept of how it works and any of it. You're really, really stupid. Okay, anyway. The argument through. They spent all of 10 seconds addressing it and don't take into account that if we have the mass, then we have to quadruple the height. And what is the real implication of that? It's half the mass, and you're going to give it twice the velocity, which means it's going to be in the gravity exactly the same amount of time. I mean, in the sense that if you understand the half mass is only collecting gravity at half the rate. So just figure that twice as much time is going to equal the same amount of energy. If I have a bucket half the size and I put it out in the rain, it just has to be out in the rain twice as long to have just as much water as the bigger bucket. Right? Yes. So it's how they think of gravity that's broken. They haven't given it 10 seconds of thought. Anyway... they didn't give it this thought 300 years ago. This is the key issue, okay? Is this stupid idea that you think distance matters when distance doesn't have anything to do with gravity? And I'm going to give you a bunch of illustrations to point out how it doesn't mean anything. Well, all that counts is how long are you in the gravity? How long are you being affected by it? That is free falling in it. And that's all that's decided. Nothing else matters. Just how much time do you spend in the gravity? All right, quadruple its height. It is raised to swing up to the action of the crane. So this is another thing he didn't give it any thought. things don't swing, okay, up, unless they're affected by air resistance. So if I have a very light thing on a string, and I go like this, the light thing just goes straight up because the air resistance is greater than the energy required to lift it against gravity. So in effect, there's more pressure created by the air than is created to lift the object up, so it lifts up. But the heavier I make it, the more the air doesn't have anything to do with it anymore, because it's a tiny amount of surface area that's getting hit. You know, if it's the same size object, but 1,000 times heavier, it won't waste any energy storing it in gravity. It'll just start moving sideways. There won't be any resistance to its movement, any substantial resistance. And there certainly won't be enough to lift a 1-ton ball, for example. So gravity doesn't really play a role. And whatever you put into gravity, you get back from gravity. So again, it's kind of a moot point. And so you can sort of understand it just by your own human reactions. If you have a very heavy suitcase, you know, you pull it along, you know, if you're walking, it has to stay pretty much vertical with you, and you get any motion in it at all and you'll start being pulled in different directions by it. So the idea is to keep it at the same height. All right, so where were we? Quadruple the height, raise the swing above the, in order for it to fall twice the velocity, so it has equal momentum to the normal sized one. And that's all the point is equal momentum. And yes, they don't really swing wrecking balls. It's just a fact. They don't go, let's push it this way, and then let's push it this way. They just move the crane this way. The ball hangs below, and then they move the crane with a velocity and make the ball go that velocity. It's not really being swung, okay, in any normal sense, because there isn't any amount of, like I said, the air resistance against the 1-ton wrecking ball is minor. Now, if it was filled with air, it was a balloon, then of course the balloon would go up, all right, because it's a lot less pressure to lift the balloon. So it's your misunderstanding of the whole concept. You don't understand any of this. Okay, so let's just do this. And if we follow Gary and Toadie's logic, then we can have it again, and now we have to raise it 16 times higher. But the point is you're not raising it. You're just increasing the velocity of the how fast you can swing it. So you can swing it much faster if it's lighter. Just a fact. To make it have the same momentum as the normal ball, whatever that is. Oh, making a crane that tall. So again, it has nothing to do with it. Frankly, the 4-ton wrecking ball has to be very tall. So, you know, you're not gaining anything, you know, just because it has to have substantial weight to be counterbalancing the big heavy wrecking ball. Okay. Making the crane that tall doesn't sound at all problematic, does it? LOL. So he thinks wrecking balls just work by lifting a mass and dropping a mass. Now, certainly that's what they do to break the stuff into small. The whole point is to break things into small pieces so you can put them in a truck and get rid of them. So certainly they do some of that. But, you know, they're not, you know, basically they're not trying to break steel. You know, they're basically breaking the concrete. Off the steel. Doesn't sound at all problematic, does it? LOL. And if it's taller, then the base must be wider and heavier. Yeah, they go together, but regardless, the argument wasn't that it'd be a good idea to make a wrecking ball 400 tons. You know, that's not the argument. The argument is you're not gaining anything, okay, is the argument. Your theory is the one that says lighter is better, and when it's not. Okay. All right. In other words, the gains are outweighed by the massive extra expense and inconvenience. So there's no extra expense and inconvenience to go with lighter, because it's really just about the arc of the swing of the... All you're saying is how far can the crane move? And the longer the arm, the more movement you can get at a distance. But obviously, you can only move so much because you have only so much space to work in. But it's really just about the speed of the turning of the crane. The crane turning is what imposes the momentum on the ball. Anyway. Making a crane that tall doesn't sound at all problematic. And if it is taller, then the base must be wider and heavier. Okay. In other words, the gains are outweighed by the massively extra expense and inconvenience, says Stephen Brozo. Okay. Frankly, it has nothing to do with it. It just has to do with the fact that it's easier to move a crane that doesn't weigh 20 tons. Okay, utter impracticality of having huge cranes that might not fit on the roads. Yeah, right. So, again, who's arguing for bigger? You're the one making the argument that smaller has more energy. And then you're saying, smaller's not convenient. When, what? Yeah, no, that doesn't make any sense. Sorry. And the arc it would swing is necessarily much, much bigger. So, again, he thinks, again, that you have to give it momentum, that you somehow have to arc. You have to swing it one way and then bring it back the other way. That's not the trick. You just need to take it to a position and then move it. You can move it. If it's really heavy, you can't move very fast. If it's lighter, you can move a lot faster. So you're just giving it the velocity of the tip of the crane. So however fast you can make the tip of the crane go is how fast your wrecking ball will go. Duh. Because the ball is going to hang straight down, retard. I mean, you can do the analogy with like an airplane with something, you know, hanging below it, a weight. And the airplane's flying. And you can get the idea that, oh, yeah, if the thing is really heavy, then the rope will have a little bit, you know, the cable will, you know, air resistance will affect it a little tiny bit. It'll rise up a little tiny bit, and that's it. It's going to hang pretty much direct down. And the lighter I make the object, the more the wind is going to be able to have an effect on it. You know, the wind is going to be a stronger and stronger force relative to the weight. So relative to the weight, the wind's going to now be able to be more substantial a friction, and it's going to force the energy to go up. Duh. All right, anyway. In other words, the gains are outweighed by the massively extra... Okay, we already did that. And the arc of the swing will necessarily be much bigger. So again, he thinks the arc of the swing has something to do with it, and that just has to do with how fast the tip of your crane can move. The faster it can move, the faster the ball will go. All right, which means the buildings would be a problem. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. So you're an idiot. Okay, so let's see. It's not like they haven't already followed the kinetic energy formula and made the ball as small as possible and the crane as tall as possible to facilitate maximum velocity. So again, bullshit. Because the only thing giving it energy is gravity. There he goes. So he really thinks it's gravity. That you're storing the energy in gravity. That's all that wrecking balls do. They lift ball and then drop ball. And then he talks about it having to swing. So he doesn't really understand the concepts here at all. All right, so let's just do the 300-year-old stupid, retarded mistake. It wasn't changed by Einstein. That's the irony. So you can't blame Einstein's new physics for confusing anybody because it doesn't change these facts at all. Alright, so simple equation. You have a Earth, let's say, and you're going to fly something by the Earth. And the Earth's gravity is going to bend the trajectory, right? Well, what's going to decide how much it's bent? What's going to make the decision when you're here? And what's going to make the decision is entirely dependent on velocity, which means how fast you're going. And the slower you're going, the more you're going to get bent. So you get bent a perfect right angle, right? You're here at this point, you're going to go straight in if you have no velocity. No velocity, straight into the Earth. Okay, but the more velocity I go through, the gravity. Now let's see, the gravity is doing this, right? It's a little strength lines of gravity are coming out, and all you're really saying is what am I going to be affected by? And this again, the only logical way to understand it is how big your mass is going to decide how much of this affects you. That's it. So it's a bucket. And the other only factor is going to be is how long were you in this stuff? How much could you possibly collect? Let's just say it was going in. That's how they teach it. So let's understand. Leonard Susskind would draw this picture. To teach gravity, Einstein's gravity, he would draw this picture. He would draw mock gravity. He would consider it a medium, and he would consider it converging to the center of an object. And the question just is how much mass do you have and how fast are you going? And that's all that's going to decide. So the more mass you have, the more of the stuff you're going to collect. But the faster you're going, the less you're going to be in it. So kind of like a wind, you know. You could think the wind is blowing this way and you have a sailboat. Well, if your sailboat's going really fast, how much of the wind can it get bent by? So the faster you go through the little patch of wind, the less of the wind will be pushing you this way. And the slower you go through this patch, the more it will bend you. And that's this is just the simple logic. So when I sit here and say overtly, this is how gravity works. You've got a big mass, just a bucket, okay? Half the mass is a smaller bucket. Well, that's... Oh, I didn't do that well at all, did I? Yeah, sorry. Oh. God, that's just terrible. I forgot to put the camera on. My mistake. Well, I didn't draw that much that you couldn't follow along. All right. It's just racing. It's a pain in the ass. Okay, so the gravity is coming down as a rate, a constant rate. And the feather, if this was a feather, right? And this was a hammer. Okay, the idea is this has a huge extra amount of mass, and this has a tiny amount of mass. But the fact is that just means that this has a tiny bucket, that is a tiny number of atoms to be hit by the rain, and this one has thousands of times more atoms to be hit by the rain. So it will collect more wetness, and this will collect less wetness. Just because, you know, molecules it's like this is the atoms in the feather and this is the atoms in the hammer. And so the hammer's denser and more stuff is going to be collected because of the denser material. There's going to be a lot less missing. All right, so the feather and the hammer will move at the same speed because they're collecting the same proportional amount per atom. You can't change how much the atoms themselves are collecting. So you really have to understand gravity as a nuclear force. It's affecting the atoms. And the atoms are all the same size, let's just say, for the sake of argument. So the atoms aren't different. So the atoms can only move one speed because the atoms are only collecting, all those buckets are the same size. So think of the atoms as little standard buckets. And all you're saying is the one object has a lot more standard buckets than the other object has. And therefore, it's going to be proportional. They'll both go the same velocity, but, you know, more buckets means you're collecting overall more rain. And then when you hit the ground, you're going to have more of an impact. You've collected more momentum, even though your velocities are the same. And so, yeah, I guess I'll pause and do the four times higher thing. But I've already explained this. But we can do it again. It's the key misunderstanding, is this stupid idea of distance versus time. It's just about time. How much time are you in the gravity where you're actually absorbing energy from it? If you're standing still, if I hold my hand still because my body's holding it against the gravity, it's not gaining anything. Nothing's going in its buckets, so to speak. It's essentially got to be required because my hand is pushing it back. So I can't gain anything. It's pushing back, which knocks all the juice out of the bucket, so to speak. I don't know how to perfectly metaphor that, but I can't collect energy, okay, if there's a force pushing against the bucket. It's like turns the bucket upside down. The bucket can't collect anything. The bucket can only collect when it's free falling, when it's able to collect freely without some force countering the collection process. It collects it by gaining velocity. If it can't gain velocity, then it can't collect anything. Can't collect momentum. Nothing gets in the buckets. So I don't know how else to say that. But anyway, we'll say it a few other ways, because that's what it requires, a few different ways of saying it. But the irony of it, I mean, I made a really stupid video a year ago for 1 hour of one day where I had some silly idea in my head that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't four times the distance to go twice the speed. And here they're fundamentally misunderstanding the concept. It's just so funny. All right. So this thread that this comment's part of was started by some idiot who was arguing about potential energy and making some argument that rocket fuel is based on kinetic energy formula, which is just absolute nonsense. The whole problem with their calculations of how much fuel it takes to get somewhere is based on this huge misunderstanding of how it works. And so that's why they have to make it so much more complicated than it really is, because they're not getting how obvious it is that it's the opposite equation to the falling in gravity is going against gravity. And so the simple argument is that if you know, if you have two objects, okay, and this one's half the mass of this one, okay, so this is one mass, this is one half mass. All right, I got the thing on, yeah, okay. All right, you have to go four times higher to double the speed. Well, you have to do that anyway. So to double the speed of this, if I wanted to put this big thing in here, up there, to double its speed, I also have to go four times higher. Okay, so the four times higher thing doesn't have much to do with it. Okay, what you're really just saying is in this case, to get the same amount of energy as this, right? In this case, I'll get twice as much energy. So when this lands, there'll be 2x. All right, even though I went four times higher, I only got 2x extra velocity. So I didn't get four times the energy. And that comes out in the outcome. I mean, you can't believe that because it's going twice the velocity, it has four times the energy. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. So anyway, that's what distance does for you. It does nothing to explain why it makes a difference. And the only reason why it makes a difference is because the fact is that because your velocity is constantly increasing as you're going down, you're moving more distance per unit of time. Okay, so how much distance you move per time is constantly changing as you're increasing your velocity. So the amount of time you're in the gravity, this will be twice as much time. Four times higher, only twice the time. So that's the key argument here. They're just saying four times the distance must be four times the energy. Well, it's not, because as you're moving faster, you're not collecting as much, you know, you're obviously moving, as you're moving faster, you're moving more distance, but you're only collecting the same amount of gravity. So the amount of gravity you collected here is going to be exactly the same as the amount of gravity you collected here. It's going to be exactly the amount of gravity you collected here. It's how long you're in it. How long the wind is able to blow on you is going to decide how much you're moved by it. And the same thing is true for gravity. So in this case, you know, where you don't have the same mass and you're not doubling the energy, you just want to get the same energy out. Yes, you go four times higher just to increase the velocity, to double the velocity. So that's all four times higher means, twice the velocity. Well, the same rule goes for going up as it does for going down. So the faster I can lift off, that means, say if I was going to this height, and then I'm going to start slowing down, and then I'll go, you know, much slower here. Right? So these are units of time. So you get that, if I was going slow and I only wanted to get this high, right, I would be in the gravity a longer time, which means I'd collect more of it against me. It would have more time to push against me. So the faster I get through it, the less fuel I use to go to a higher height. It becomes more and more efficient. The units of gravity become more and more efficient the faster I get through them. Just like getting past, you know, the Earth. If I want to go past the Earth and not get bent too much, the faster I go, the less the Earth's gravity will affect me and the less I'll be bent. So the faster I go, the less gravity I'm affected by. The same is true here. The faster I go, the less gravity I have time to collect. So the quicker I can get to any point in space, then the less work I'll do. So if I'm going to orbit, the quicker I can get to the orbit, the quicker I can get to the location, the less fuel I'll use. Just a fact. The quicker I can get there. But the catch is, the quicker I get there, the calculation for getting there quicker means I have energy to go further. So to gain the efficiency, I have to plan on going somewhere much further, and I'll end up using more fuel in the end because I'm actually going further than I wanted to go. But that's the catch. That's why they kind of shoot rockets at an arc off the Earth, is because they're going to use the motion, okay, as the orbital speed. So they're going to use the same energy twice, essentially. They're just after going up. right? But they can save energy by going up and into orbit. So if they just went straight up, then they're stuck with no velocity, and they're just going to be pushed back down again. But if they go up and fly into their orbit at an angle, well, then they'll be much more efficient because they'll be using part of the velocity to get into orbit quicker, which will be much more efficient. And then they're going to use the extra that they've pushed themselves. They use the higher velocity here at the beginning. All right, it's, you know, they push the rocket as fast as they could. So, and they just changed the trajectory. So they're now they're going to use the they're going to take the vertical motion and turn it into a horizontal motion, and that way capitalize on the fact that they really shot for here, and they just bent the path to create the orbital speed. So they really shot for here, gained the efficiencies of being in the gravity less time to get to this point, right, which will be that point, and just turn the path, okay, to create the beneficial orbital speed. All right, so again, so there won't be any counter argument. There hasn't been anything close to one. I mean, the bucket analogy works, okay? So it's just the heavier the mass, the bigger the bucket. And all you're saying is how much crap can get in it. And all it depends on is how much time you give it to get in there. And it doesn't matter if you're moving against it, because this speed of this force is the speed of light. So it's sort of irrelevant. Your tiny little speeds going into the force couldn't mean a damn thing. All right. So all you're really just saying is how the stopwatch is ticking, and that's how much energy, you know, just the size of the bucket. So obviously, if I have a certain number of joules of energy going up, and I have a big bucket, I'm going to collect the counter joules from gravity very, very quickly. That's why I only go 1/4 the height. It's because I have a giant bucket, okay, going not very fast, collecting the counter force. And so I end up with, you know, I think I meant to put 1/4 here. But here I have a much smaller bucket, and it's going twice as fast. So the launching speed here is twice the velocity, twice the size velocity arrow I started with, plus my bucket's half the size. So yes, of course, I get to this location up here with that energy because the counter force is going into my bucket twice as slow. I'm collecting it twice as little per time. I'm creating twice as less, half as much as getting in the bucket. And I'm getting through it. I'm getting to locations in less time. So where this got to this location in 1 second, this one got to this location in 1 second. And so it's only 1 second's worth of collection in here. And there's 1 second's worth of collection in here at these two completely different locations. So the counter force hasn't come close to slowing me down enough yet. So I just keep going until I'm 4 times higher than this one. And I've collected, okay, enough counter force for the 100 joules I started with. So if I start with 100 joules, I'm just waiting until I collect 100 joules worth of gravity in the bucket. When I collect 100 joules worth, then I'll stop. And the point is I'll stop here, which is twice the time, okay, to get to this 4 times higher. So it'll take me twice as long to stop, but I will stop. Okay, when the energy is countered. And then if I drop, I'll collect back exactly what I started with, and I'll hit the ground with 100 joules. And this object, only going 1/4 of the distance, will hit the ground with 100 joules of energy. You can't make more energy by launching light things faster. It's not more energy. It's not more atoms moving. If you always just thought of it as atoms moving, okay, you can't make more atoms moving, all right? And the only difference between light things going fast and heavy things going slow is how the atoms are moving. That is, the atoms in the heavy thing are dragging more atoms with them, and the atoms in the lighter thing, so to speak, it's pushing less material. So obviously, pushing lighter things, you can go faster with the same energy. Twice as fast. In fact, all right, I don't know how else to say it, but I'm just saying he's making this claim that somehow, me and other people who understand the universe as a mechanical system and understand something about thermodynamics and the laws of thermodynamics, where you just can't make free heat. Heat has to move from one object to another. Pressure has to move from one object to another. It all has to be accounted for as material moving. And there's no way of getting around that. And that's what momentum is. It's material moving. And you can't move more atoms by changing by pretending that a higher velocity means it has more ability to move stuff. It doesn't. But anyway, just an idiot. All right, so I guess I could say a little bit about potential energy, because that's, like I said, where he starts with this crap. Gary thinks kinetic energy equation is not used for rockets. It's not used to navigate in space. How many times do we have to make this distinction? The rocket crap, any fuel things you get, is because they've already made up. See, when they decide how much energy the rocket fuel has, they decide based on where they're going. See, the fuel has more power the further they go. That's just a fact. Professor Lewin will admit this fact. Do you want me to play that clip again? I mean, he admits the fact that, to move something from 100 miles an hour to 200 miles an hour takes less fuel than to move something from 0 to 100. He'll admit it. So obviously the faster you're going, that is, the more velocity you intend to give your ship, the more powerful your fuel gets. So any fuel you can carry to these higher speeds, all of a sudden you'll get, where you're getting only 500 joules per gallon on the ground when you start, you'll be getting 5,000 joules per gallon, okay, when you're out in space. And it's just not true. There's not more energy in the fuel. You're just creating a higher economy, okay, by essentially shooting for a further distance. So all the notches of distance become more economical the faster, the quicker you can get to a quicker velocity, the less fuel you'll use. And so it's the efficiency of velocity and getting through the force that you're fighting quicker. The quicker you get through the force, the less rain you collect. The quicker you can move through the rain. If I'm running from one door to another door and I want less rain to hit me, all I have to do is move faster. You can just logically understand that none of the downing part can get to me if I move quickly enough. If I move quicker than the raindrops are falling, I can't collect any of them. Duh. So anyway, they already say, well, 1 gallon equals 1 million joules, and they'll just say that. And then if they, like I said, that's if they're only going this high. And then if they're going this high, they'll say 1 gallon equals 10,000 joules. So they just change how much octane there is in the fuel based on their target location, idiot. So it has nothing to do with the kinetic energy formula, because it's garbage in, garbage out. It's just circular. They create a circular definition of how much power the fuel has based on how far they're going. Duh. I mean, yeah. So he also made some crack about potential energy. Okay, so here he says it too. We'll finish this one. Again, he is dead wrong. So, of course, they don't use it to navigate. So, again, you're going to argue that if they shoot a bullet out this side of 2,000 joules with the same gun, right? One gun. They shoot a gun, and the bullet goes out that way with 2,000 joules. And the gun goes out this side, okay, with 2 joules. What happens to the spaceship, idiot? Do you really think it goes, whoa, big turn, 2,000 joules that way, only 2 joules that way, so I go this way? Do you think that happens, idiot? Do you think NASA thinks that happens, idiot? He won't answer the question. All right. Denying potential energy is as stupid as saying the Earth is flat. So again, I'm not denying you can use the word potential if you wish, but it's like saying I have potential sunburnability. I mean, we know I don't really have any potential to be sunburned unless the sun burns me. The sun has the potential energy. The sun has the energy, period. The light, the photons, are the energy. It's kind of stupid to say, I have the energy. I have the energy to be sunburned. No, I don't have the energy to be sunburned. It's not my potential. It's not me that has it. It's the fucking sun that has it, shit for brain. So the point is when you say you go up in gravity and say, whoa, I have potential energy, you don't have shit. Because until the gravity actually pushes you down, you ain't going anywhere. The energy is in the gravity. The energy isn't in you. You don't have any potential energy, shithead. Springs, on the other hand, yeah, they store energy. When you compress the spring, you change the magnetic arrangement of the atoms, and they have a strong potential in the sense of they have that misalignment is creating pressure for them to move. And they're being the pressure's being resisted by some object that you're placing there to stop them from moving back to where they want to be. Back where they don't have unequal and uneven pressure. But to call, like I say, gravitational potential energy is just baby talk, because it doesn't recognize the real source of the energy, which is the gravity field. I mean, a boat sitting in the room where you're going to sell one. You don't say, oh, the boat has potential energy. What? No, it doesn't. Until you put it in a stream. Until you put it somewhere where it can go. It doesn't have any potential. Shit, it's only going to get energy from some system that's going to give it energy. It's not going to have any, it doesn't have any energy of its own. Let's see. So what else did he say here? Denying potential energy is as stupid as flat earth. The moon isn't spinning. What the fuck? Why is he bringing that? And the moon isn't spinning. I don't even know why he'd bring that one up. Spinning relative to what? He should really brush up on high school physics. So, yeah, this Walker guy gives himself away. He has other sock accounts. Anyway, and keep his milk shut now. Whatever the fuck. So, yeah, you really proved absolutely nothing with that stupid pile of shit statement. Okay. I just don't get why he can't even get his head around the potential energy concept. So I articulated a precise description of how energy is stored, and yet he can't counter-argue with anything relevant to that argument. The potential is not in the system. All right? You can't just say, like, the raindrop has potential energy. It doesn't have any energy. It doesn't have any anything until gravity applies a force to it. It's stupid to say the thing that isn't have any force, to say it has the potential energy, when of course it doesn't have it. Stupid. Okay, it's like he just has to disagree. No, this is exactly why you idiots for 300 fucking years have turned physics into a religion. The religion of distance. That's all I care about. How far does it go? When you should know that everything goes forever if it was in space. Oh, shit. I often think he is only interested in propagating an endless argument and waste. Oh, anyway, this is just, yeah, go ahead. Whatever you think, you know, the opposite is going to be the truth. So it is just not even worth the trouble. All right. So, fuck it. Enough said. Gravity is about time. How long are you falling in it? It's all that's going to matter. And how much mass do you have to collect it? The more mass you have, the more little bits of stuff there is that will be moving at velocity. And the less mass you have, the less little bits of stuff moving at a velocity. And the less for the gravity to hit when you move it up. Oh, it's that simple. So this is the key argument. Just realize, for 350 years, this is the first confusion. So Galileo, Newton, and Descartes kind of understood that gravity is proportional to your mass, and it's not about distance. It's just about how much mass in the gravity for how long. And then it all got turned upside down into just about how far you go in the gravity. And if you have to lift something four times higher, it means you did four times as much work. When no, you didn't, because to lift it four times higher, you have to go faster to do it in twice the time. It's a time-dependent force. It's just, you know, it's not a distance-dependent force. It's a time-dependent force. The faster you get through the gravity, the less gravity you had to oppose. That obvious, that logical. Get through it quicker, less of it gets on you. Somebody's spraying paint out of a can, and you want to get the least amount of paint on you as possible. You just go through faster. Duh. Alright, this has been a draft of physics.com video presentation. Likewise, it's been a debatephysics.com, but again, the debate is always in this useless form where these obnoxious jerks get to say things and they never respond to a single argument made against them. Yeah, they just keep reciting the same stupid, vacuous, snarky rhetoric.